Well, has anybody here ever been trapped? Now, when I ask the question, being trapped, I mean, there's trapped and then there's trapped, right? There's different ways of being trapped.
I have.
You have?
Yes.
Okay.
I got my arm stuck under a plow.
Now, that's a trap.
Yes.
That's a trap.
On the other hand, I call my son on the cell phone.
Okay.
And lift this stupid plow off me.
Okay, a plow. Wow. A plow? Wow. That rhymes all the time. But, you know, here are different ways. You know, very few people have been trapped like this. Now, it does happen. You know, somebody's got a gun to your head. They've, you know, they're kidnapping. But maybe you've been trapped like this, where people are surrounding you and they're hounding you and they're saying, you're wrong, or you've got to do this. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but this can be a scary place where everyone around you is moving in one direction. I remember I was at a baseball game with the Yankees, and the crowd had, the game was over, and everybody came out of this, and the stadium was, of course, packed. And people had poured out of the stands and now were in the back, you know, in the walkway, that area where they sell everything. And it was wall-to-wall people. I mean, we were jammed together. And people started yelling, the different fans from the different sides were yelling and screaming at one another. And I felt trapped. I thought, if I fall, I'm a dead man. I'll get trampled. And it's just having that enclosed on you. Or I remember I was reaching behind a desk to put in a plug for a light. And so I climbed on top of the desk, because moving the desk makes too much sense. And so I climbed on top of the desk and stuck my arm down back behind the desk. You ever do this? You know, you're trying to plug it in and you can't see and you're moving, and then it's like, okay, I can't get my arm out. I know I got my arm in, but my arm won't come out. I felt I was stuck, I was trapped. And I calmly and very cerebrally, very patiently screamed out that I needed help, that I was trapped. The family came and rescued me. Now, this is happening from these kinds of traps here are from the outside. But, you know, we do things like what I did, stick my arm behind the desk. Sometimes we trap ourselves. Have you ever literally painted yourself into a corner? I haven't, but I did one better. I was installing, we had a shower, and it had a curtain, you know, a shower curtain. I thought, that's too old-fashioned. I'm going to put in a glass door. And so, don't laugh. It's not funny. So I went, you know, I measured it and everything. I went and bought one. I put in the piece on the bottom, I put the piece on the top, I put the adjustments in where the door is going to sit on a pivot kind of thing. And so I go inside the shower because it's got to be on the inside, otherwise it splashes out. So I go on the inside and I put it in and I can't get out. Because I put it in such a way that it swings in towards me and, you know, doesn't swing out. I put it in backwards, which is what I do for most things in life. So I was trapped in the shower, so I had to take the door apart. This is why when I put things together, I never tighten anything. I keep it loose until it's all pretty much there, then I tighten. But, you know, we sometimes trap ourselves. But you know what's funny about trapping ourselves? If you've trapped yourself, did you do it by following a plan? Did you make a plan that says, This is how I'm going to trap myself. And you work out the details. Is that how we trap ourselves? Is that how, when other people trap us or circumstances trap us, were they planned from our perspective? No, what does that make them? Makes us a victim? They're unknown? They're a surprise? And I'm sorry?
Accidentally.
Unplanned. Things come at us. These things happen. And Joseph now is in the house of Potiphar, and we saw last week how he has risen to the top of the staff. He's Potiphar's personal assistant, and life is pretty good, right? And when life is going pretty good, what does that mean?
Something
bad's about to happen, right? Thank you. And so, but it starts out innocently enough. We're told in Genesis that Joseph was what?
Well-built.
He was, but before being well-built, he was handsome. He was well-built and handsome. What does this mean?
In the buff.
He was in the buff, okay? He looked good. He was attractive. Now, this isn't anything he planned. You know, it just happened. He grew up and that's the way God made him. And it's not fair, but that's okay. Some people look like this. My brother was like this. My brother was like this. He was like a chiseled marble statue of a Greek god. He really was. And I'm here, this little Polish Italian lump of clay. But it's not fair. More to come. But, you know, and we look at this and we think, well, how? Why them? I remember we took a once-in-a-lifetime vacation to Italy, and we're in Rome, and we're seeing all the great things of Rome. But you know what astonished me the most of everything? You know, the Colosseum, all the artwork, you know, the Vatican. The thing that I remember most was that we walked into a gift shop. And in the gift shop, I saw this thing hanging, you know, sitting in the shelf. And I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It was a calendar of hot priests. It was all these good-looking men, one for each month, in a calendar. And if you think I'm making this up, take the picture, use this QR code, and you'll go there. And every year they publish a new, and we call it the Hot Priest Calendar. And we talk about it. But, you know, it's, I don't know, I doubt these guys are really priests, but that they do, you know, it's a way to show off. And Joseph was a head turner. You know what I mean by that?
Handsome.
He was handsome. Eye candy. There you go. I think about my mother-in-law, Kate. Lovely woman. Loved her husband, Bill, very much. But when it came to Paul Newman, old blue eyes, she called him. So, and that was Joseph. And if that was the end of the story, if there was a period there, then everybody would say a big who cares. But the story only starts there. Because Potiphar's wife, after a while, what did she do? She took notice. She took notice. Over time, she said, "Who's that guy?" Maybe somebody said his name. And then, what is the culmination of looking at him? What does she say to him?
Come to bed
with me. Now, I don't know about where you come from. I don't know what your background or experiences are. But where I come from, we call that the direct approach. Okay. No beating around the bush, no, you know, pleasantries. No, that's like boom, right out. And that can really take you back. Not that I am Joseph by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm standing in the lobby of an office building in Philadelphia. And we're just chit-chatting away with some people. And all of a sudden, this young woman who works at the same company turns to me and says, "How married are you?" And I said, I just turned to her, I looked her in the eye, and I said, "Very." But it was shocking. It was out of nowhere. I didn't expect it. And so this is what happens. And Joseph, remember, he works for the family. The way he answers the question could really impact what's going to happen with his career. And what does he say? Look at what he says. But he, what?
Refused.
He refused. The first word, but, that means slap along the face. Look at this. What's the natural thing for a young, good-looking guy to do? Say yes. Who's going to know? After all, she's my, I work for her. But he says no. He refused. With me in charge, he says, the master doesn't concern himself with anything. Joseph is taking care of everything. He says, no one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you. There's a line that I won't cross. There's a door I won't open. There's a curtain I won't look behind. Because you are his wife. But he doesn't end there. That's a great statement, but he doesn't end. He winds up by saying, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Finally, he says, this is the reason. This is the underpinning reason. This is what's It's not that I'm afraid of a sexually transmitted disease. It's not that I'm wondering what people are going to say on social media. It's not anything like that. It's that it's against God. And that should be enough. That should be enough. What'd you say?
But no.
But no. No is good enough. You know. No, but to get there, to say no, do you think you just woke up one morning and it happened? No, saying no takes work. Saying no takes preparation. This memory just, do you have memories that just say, that was the weirdest thing in the world? You got any memories like that? Mary Ann and I are sitting in the living room of our house. And a neighbor walks in. Okay? Her daughter and our daughter are friends. And the neighbor stops by on the way back from work looking for her daughter. And we sit down, we're chit-chatting. And I'm embarrassed to say this. But she starts hitting on me. Yes, exactly. And I just don't know what to say. And she just keeps coming on, and I say, no, thank you. And Marianne's sitting right there. And so eventually, we shuffle her out, and Marianne looks at me and says, why was she hitting on you? I was like, I have no idea. But no is the right reason, is a good answer. I don't have to defend. It was like, no, go away. And it's not because I'm anything great, but it was just, I don't know what's wrong with this woman. She obviously needed to have her eyeglass prescription changed. But, you know, he refused. He said no. And that should have been enough, right? You turn somebody down, that's it, right? Not this woman. And what does she do? She spoke to David how often?
Every day.
Day after day after day. Not just once in the day, but multiple times. Have you ever had anybody who was irritating?
Yeah.
You know what those people are like? And I know nobody in here is irritating. I know that I'm irritating. I'm an irritating kind of guy. I once irritated my second grade teacher so badly that she like came unglued and screamed because I poked and poked. I mean, not physically, but just over and over. Anybody ever have anybody in your car say, is it there? Are we there yet?
Yeah.
It's like this scene from Shrek 2.
Are we there yet? No. Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Hey, are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
Yes.
Really?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No, you're not.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there
are
yet?
We there yet?
Hey, that's not funny. Hey, that's really immature.
That's really immature.
See, this is why nobody likes ogres. All right, you're lost.
All right, you're lost.
I'm going to just stop talking.
Finally.
And that's what it's like. This is what she did. But it wasn't if, are we there yet? It's like, come to bed. This is serious stuff. Because the answer to this question has deep, deep emotional ramifications, going to change the dynamic so much. I have so many friends who, for whatever reason, didn't say no. And it crushes me. It crushed them. It crushed their families.
They let their ego get in the way.
Maybe. Ego certainly had a friend of mine. That certainly is what it was. He was playing Texas Hold'em. And he would go over to the casino, the Hard Rock Casino, and play Texas Hold'em. And he was sitting around, and this girl came up, sat down. They started talking. And she just kept saying over and over, what a nice guy you are. You're so friendly, you're so nice, you're so kind. And over the course of a number of trips, it came and he couldn't say no. I have another friend who lives in another part of the country. Pretty much the same situation, pretty much the same sequence of events, and pretty much the same outcome. I don't like to use this word because it's overused, but devastating fits. But he didn't, and this made her angry. And so finally, one day, she sort of traps him, or he lets himself slip, and he gets in a position where there's nobody else around. And he was the only one in the house. Everybody's out. And she caught him by his cloak. Now, this isn't the coat that his father gave him. No, this is the coat of a servant. She grabs on and says, again, come to bed with me. No beating around the bush there, right? But what does he do? He says the ultimate no. He turns and runs. But the coat stays behind. She has physical evidence. And so she starts telling everybody all about this. She tells the staff, she screams out, and she paints a word picture about this slave. And look what he has tried to do. You know, he ran out, and here he is. This she couldn't think of a curse word or anything worse, so she calls him this Hebrew. She puts him down. This Hebrew, he came here, he made sport of us, he tried to sleep with me, and oh, I screamed because I am pure and innocent as the driven snow. She paints this word picture. And then Potiphar comes home, and she repeats this to him and says, you know, this slave that you brought. The question is, how could Joseph not only say no, but when faced with it, he ran away? He didn't try to discuss it, did he? He didn't try to, hey, let's talk about pluses and minuses. Let's work this. No, there's a time in life just to get up and go. And to be able to do that, you have to train for that. You have to be prepared. You can't just assume that you're going to have the strength to do it. It takes work, and you've got to want to it. 1 Corinthians 9:25 says, everyone who competes in the games goes into what?
Strict training.
Which the question is, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want to be able to say no? How badly do you want to change for Christ? Then do it to get a crown that will not last, but do it for a crown that will last. We got to look at it not for what's immediately in front of us, but what's down the road. And not just down the road eternally, but down the road for us and our family. David and Bathsheba, tragic, didn't say no. She didn't say no. There's the death of a baby. There's the death of her husband. And for the rest of his life, there was such pain and disunity, conflict within the family, with the kids. It doesn't have, and you know, he comes home, or Amy Winehouse says, life is so much more rewarding if you strive for something rather than take what's given to you on a silver plate. Anything that you've done that you've become good at, were you natural at it or did you have to work at it? You got to work at it. You got to practice. Some people ask me, how did you get to do this stuff? You know, these screens and stuff. First of all, this is the way I think, so that makes you want to pray for me. I think in pictures, but I've been doing these things since the mid-80s when personal computers first came out. I got a piece of software and I started building presentations. That makes, so how long have I been doing it?
A long time.
A long time, 40 years. It takes work, it takes practice. It takes, you know what it really takes? Failure. Oh, failures. So Amy says this, and so we move on and say, when the master, this is Potiphar, comes back, he hears the story, how your slave, in other words, it's your fault. This is your slave. And so Joseph, the master, burned with anger. And what does he do with Joseph? Throws him in prison. Now, let me tell you about the way slaves were treated in ancient Egypt. They were nothing. Why not just run a sword through him? Why not torture him right there? Whack his head off. Some people think if Potiphar's wife did this with Joseph, you think this was her first time? This was her first rodeo? Maybe she had a history. Maybe he's mad at her. He's certainly mad at Joseph. Maybe he's mad at her. Maybe he's disappointed in Joseph, saying, why didn't you look around, see where you were, make sure somebody was around? Why do you think Billy Graham, when he started, put together with some men a list of rules? And you know what was at the top of that list?
Never be alone with a woman.
Never be alone with a woman, in an elevator, especially. Even sitting at a table. But if he got in an elevator and there were people and everybody got out and the woman was left, he got out. That's how serious this is. So he's a prisoner and he's put away. And so here's Joseph. First of all, he's thrown into they rip his clothes off, his brothers, right? They rip that coat off and they throw him down into an empty well, probably got injured. They haul him up, sell him. He's a slave in Potiphar. He's sold to Potiphar. Things are going well, but now the bottom drops out. Did he do anything wrong? No. Yes. Yeah. You see, what did Corey say? God's in control. God's in control. And we can trust him even when the bottom drops out. And we know that happened with Joseph because when he winds up, we'll see in a moment, God is still with him. But I don't know about you, I'm assuming you don't have these kinds of problems like I do. But when stuff happens and bad stuff happens on top of stuff, I sometimes feel sorry for myself. And this week I went in, I went to the dermatologist. Oh, that one's nothing. Well, that one's something. We got to go and take more. So I went and, I had this taken off on my neck. I got some stitches in there. And I could say, oh, woe is me. Oh, poor Chet. this pain, the suffering. Oh, the humanity. But then I have a friend, Terry. This is what they did to him. This is on top of the fact that both his kidneys, he went through kidney failure, they installed a new kidney, but they didn't take the other ones out. So he's walking around with three kidneys for a while. Then they take one out, see how that works for a while. And then they take the other bad one out. What I've gone through is nothing. And I can't look at it that way. I got to say, God, you're in control of this. I don't know what it is you're going to do, but I'm going to look forward in hope. And that's, Joseph must have done that because when he was in the prison, the Lord is still with him. The Lord doesn't waste his time being with people who are feeling sorry for themselves. They're depending on him. And showed him kindness. God is showing him kindness in prison. And granted him favor in the eyes of the warden. Even in the pit, then as a slave, and now in a prison, the Lord is with him, preparing him, waiting for the right time. He was there. Even though it was false charges, wasn't it? What did he do wrong?
No,
Nothing. False charges. And yet, even those false charges are in the control of God. Even those false charges. So the warden sees this, and the warden now puts him in charge of everything. Does this sound familiar? Sounds like who? Potiphar, right? Sees him, sees what he does, sees how what he does prospers. Hey, I'm going to promote this guy. And he promotes him and puts everything under Joseph's care. Again, just like Potiphar. And the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in some of the stuff he did. Doesn't say some of the stuff, right? What does it say?
Whatever.
The whatever of life. The whatever of life. He had what some people would call the Midas touch. He touched it, boom, it worked. He touched it, it grew, it produced. He touched it, the organization worked better. He was in prison, but yet he was free. Think about it. He was in prison, but he was free. He was free to be the person God meant him to be. He was free to do what God wanted him to do. I don't know if you remember back at Apollo 15, there was an astronaut, James Irwin. He was an astronaut. He was Apollo 15. This is a picture of him on the moon. And, you know, that is a very small group of people. That's a very narrow group of people. And when he came back, you know, he's a celebrity, right? He's a celebrity. Well, he thought about this, and he reflected. He was coming back to Earth, and he saw the Earth rise. You know, they're on the moon, but they see the Earth coming out of the shadow. He sees that, and this is what he said to himself. He said, "As I was returning to Earth, I realized that I was a servant, not a celebrity. So I am here by God as God's servant on planet Earth to share what I have experienced that others might know the glory of God." He's just been on the moon. He's coming back. And yet, how does he think of himself? As a servant. That is job one for all of us. To be a servant. And Joseph was a servant, even through those ups and downs. And we are servants. We are servants. We are to humble ourselves, Peter says. We are to humble ourselves. Where? Under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you. Yes?
Jesus said that he came as a servant.
Yes, he did. To do what? Seek and save the lost. Yes. He came, Isaiah 53, sometimes called the suffering servant. Read that. It'll just rip your heart out that Jesus went through that. Jesus came as a servant. And if you ever watch pieces of The Chosen, especially in season 4, you see Jesus being frustrated at his disciples. Think about that. He's God. He's a man, but he's also God. And he's been teaching them. He's been with them. And they're still arguing about who's going to be on his right hand and his left hand. It's like, what is with you guys? But he was the servant. And you see, that God may exalt you, may exalt you. And we're not satisfied with that. We're not. We want to know the when. It's like, okay, God, you're going to exalt me. When? I want to know. What's the time? What's the circumstances? What are the things I've got to do between now and then? Lay it out for me. Who are the people I got to talk to? You know, I need to have all the information. I got to have all the details. You ever pray that way when it comes to God answering a prayer? God, you got to do it a certain way. It don't work that way. God doesn't work that way. What are we told? God's ways are higher than our ways. Higher. We're not going to, we may not know this week why it happened. We may not know in this life why it happened, but it did. And God is in control of that. I think about everybody, anybody here know a guy named Rick Warren? You know Rick Warren? Saddleback? Great guy. Do you know where all that started? Do you know where all that started? It started with his great-great-great-grandfather walking into a church in London and hearing Charles Spurgeon give a sermon. Great pastor, great Baptist preacher from London. And he was converted to Christ. And from that, he grew as a Christian. And that faith got passed from generation to generation to generation to generation. And now Rick Warren's comes out of that heritage. When his great-great-great-grandfather knelt and received Christ, he had no idea what was going to happen in the future. But God did. God did. God knows. And that gives us great hope. It gives us great relief and release. Let me tell you, I am not looking forward to knee replacement surgery, okay? I really am not. You know, I've had two hips replaced. I'm having this one done. And everybody says, oh, it's so much worse than the hips. Oh, it's like, thank you for that word of encouragement. I really appreciate it. But do you know what scares me most? Not the pain. Not the inconvenience. But I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. And there's a flip side to that coin. It means I'm going to have to depend on other people. And boy, do I hate depending on other people. It just irritates. I can do this. There's going to be a good chunk of time where I'm going to be, I can't. And I've got to realize that.
I always do what the doctor tells me, because I figure that'll be an inconvenience now than have trouble forever.
Well, you're smarter and wiser than I am, Bonnie, let me tell you. I will follow instructions. I'm following instructions even this morning. I'm following instructions. And starting in the middle of this week, I got more instructions to start following. And then the week after that, even more instructions to start following, just in preparation for this glorious event. So, they didn't? They just said, I'm not going to rehab. I'm coming home.
Well, I didn't think I was going to, but they sent me to rehab for a couple of days. And after the exercise and everything, I didn't have any pain or anything ever.
Oh, good.
I always refused their pain shots, but I didn't need them. And I'm just lucky.
Well, God, and everybody's experience is different. But let me tell you what I've set my mind on. I'm going to do everything I can to be the best patient. I'm going to say, they want to take my blood. You pick the arm. You've got the sharp instruments. You figure it out. You know, you tell me to get up, I'll get up. You tell me to get down, get down. I'm going to do it happily and to be pleasant. You know, there was a thing in the news this week about a guy got fined $5,000. Did you see it? He got billed $5,000 by an airline because he caused trouble on the airplane, and they had to land someplace other than their destination, and so they billed him for the fuel. I thought that was a good thing, but I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be a bitter, angry person. So, and Joseph, I think, is our model. He certainly could have been angry. He certainly could have been bitter. But he wasn't, and the Lord was with him. May we walk this week, the Lord is with you. I want you to think about ways this week. How can I walk with the Lord? How can I, in my daily life, in the way I interact with people, show God's kindness and grace to them? That's your homework assignment. Would you pray with me? Our Father and our God, I thank you that you love us and that through the life of Jesus, you came fully God, fully man, and were so patient and kind and gracious. And you did not walk away from the cross. You walked towards it, carrying the cross, so that you could pay for us, that we could be your children. Oh God, forgive us for being short-sighted, short-tempered. Let us look to you and being with you. And may you empower us this week in Jesus' name. Amen.